Good morning, church. I tell you what, it's a new day today. It is turned off much cooler this week, kind of begins the fall season. But I was thinking more specifically of one day yesterday, and once one day season is over, it kind of begins a new season, doesn't it? Which is preparing for the next one day. It feels like that sometimes. So appreciate that. And if you didn't get to come out yesterday, you really missed out. It was a great thing. So thankful. Saw so many of you out there yesterday, and thankful that so many of you accepted the invitation to serve. And you could be seen in every part of one day, all over the place. It was just a great thing. I was thinking this morning about invitations, and invitations can be kind of funny things if you think about it, because we get all kinds of invitations really all the time. We get some written invitations, we get some verbal invitations, we get some on the phone or via text, or some come in the mail. We get invitations to parties, invitations to weddings, invitations to graduations, invitations to get into mischief, invitations even to do good, like yesterday. And then some invitations are more memorable than others, right? We get some that we might put straight into the trash or forget them out of hand. But some invitations really stay with us the rest of our lives. I'll never forget one invitation that I received a couple of years ago. It was in fourth grade. And it was from this cute little girl that I had a crush on, and I had a crush on her for some time. She was quite the stunner. Her name was Jennifer Gordon. These are real pictures. These are not, you know, actors. And through the school year, somehow we had gotten to be pretty good friends, and it got to the point that I looked forward to seeing Jennifer Gordon every day. You know, I was looking forward to seeing her and talking with her and hanging out with her. And one day, toward the end of the school day, her best friend came up to me, and her best friend gave me a note. And she told me not to open it until I got home. Very specific instructions. And so I dutifully followed her instructions and opened a note as soon as I got out the door and on the school bus. And inside was a form in the form of a multiple choice question. And the question was, will you go with me? Which was how we asked people out last year. And then you were supposed to check yes or no. And this was the first such note that I'd ever received like this. And let me tell you, I could not have been much more excited. So I immediately, without even hesitating, checked yes, prepared to return the note the next day. Like, I was like making sure I had my backpack all sorted and brought it in. I got there in class and was looking around, but Jennifer was not there that day. Nor was she there the day after either. And then came the weekend. And so by Monday, I'd sort of lost my nerve, and she gave no indication that the note had ever been written. So I just resigned myself. I'm just going to hang on to this in case she asks for it later. And in a few weeks, we sort of drifted apart, and it appeared that I had missed my lone shot at my longtime crush. And so I finally just gave up and threw the note away, much to my chagrin, in the classroom wastebasket, where apparently nothing is sacred. So another one of her friends, spotting a note she had yet to stick her nose into, pulled the invitation out of the trash and proceeded to read it to the entire entourage of girls in my class. And I will never forget that giddy, giggling group of girls or their beady little eyes glaring at me over the open note. Oh, the humanity. I could not have been more embarrassed. And I still don't know how I managed to go on attending the same school, but my mother insisted that moving was out of the question, so I was sort of forced into it. But that little episode of shame taught me a valuable lesson about invitations. See, invitations have three parts to them. Number one, an invitation has to be extended, right? Someone must invite someone else to something or to do something or to be a part of something. It must, number one, be extended. Number two, it has to be accepted or rejected, I guess, as the case may be. That someone else has to agree, if the invitation is to be fulfilled, that other person has to agree to participate or be a part of whatever it is that's being proposed. And number three, there must be an understanding of what that invitation involves, what you're being invited to, you being at the right place at the right time, right? What the dress is for the occasion, what we'll be doing on said occasion, how sad it is to have an invitation extended, to have an invitation accepted, but then show up at the wrong place or at the wrong time or wearing the wrong thing to do the wrong thing, right? Well, something very similar happens in our walk with Jesus because Jesus extends to us an invitation. We even call it an invitation song for a specific part of our services in Churches of Christ and Christian churches. We have an invitation song, though the Lord makes it clear that this invitation is sort of open-ended. It's not relegated to a single place and time. It is always open, but we recognize that Jesus extends this invitation to us, right? And we have to decide whether we're going to accept his invitation or not. But perhaps even more importantly, we have to know what he's inviting us to. We have to understand what this invitation is for, where he wants us to meet him, what he has in mind when he issues the invitation. And again, it's tragic when people hear the invitation of Jesus because he's extended it, and they want to accept, and they accept his invitation, but they end up at the wrong place or at the wrong time or with the wrong idea because they didn't understand what they were being invited to. Well, as a whole, Christianity has done a pretty fair job at times and in places especially of making it clear that Jesus is extending an invitation to people. We let them know that Jesus wants them, that he has given his life for them, and that he's extended an invitation to them, and they want to accept this invitation, but they don't really know what that means. What am I being invited to? What's the activity that's involved, right? And so, over and over again, we see throughout the Gospels that Jesus invites people. Specifically, he calls for them to follow him, which it sounds a little vague to us, but we know in Matthew chapter 4, he calls Peter, Andrew, James, and John. If you're familiar with that song. And later, in Matthew chapter 9, he calls Levi. Or we know him as Matthew because his name was later changed. In John chapter 1, we can read about where Jesus called Philip. And in fact, throughout the Gospels, Jesus invites particular people. He's got a general invitation to everybody, but he does invite particular people to follow him. And it wasn't just the 12 who received this call, but again, all who listened were given this general invitation and invitation to come and hear the teaching and then to obey it or to respond to it. In Mark chapter 8, we read something that kind of sums up this invitation. And it ought to be a very familiar passage to you. Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. This is sort of Jesus' description of what the invitation is to deny self, to take up our cross, and to follow him. Which doesn't sound like a particularly inviting invitation. I mean, it's not like Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, let him come over to my house. We'll have pie and ice cream after church. That would be a lot more fun invitation to extend. Be a lot more fun invitation to accept. You'd think people would be more likely to respond to pie and ice cream. But that's not what Jesus offers. That's not what the invitation is for. Instead, he calls for self-denial, for taking up a cross, and for following after Jesus to who knows where. Why would anyone answer this invitation? Right? This is not a fun invitation. If I said, hey, everybody's invited over to my house, we're going to clean out my sock drawer, then we're going to crawl under the house and clean out all the stuff that's fallen under there over the last 100 years. Would everybody be excited to do that? Right? It sounds boring. It sounds painful. It sounds dirty. That's not an invitation that I'd expect anybody to be eager to get to. And the invitation of Jesus is even more so because it involves not just dirty, hard work. It involves a death sentence. Taking up a cross is a death sentence. It's like making the last walk to the electric chair or the gas chamber or to the lethal injection, right? What's even more puzzling than that is like the way people really responded when it happened. The disciples answered this invitation call like without question. Look at what the example of Levi we talked about a little bit earlier from Mark chapter 2. It says, as he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. Just like that. How could such a simple invitation by Jesus evoke an immediate response? I mean, we're talking about a guy abandoning his livelihood, walking away from his job, walking away from the life that he's known. Maybe he has a family. We don't know. Why would he do that, right? Surely something else must have happened between them. Surely there must be more of this. Surely this publican, this tax collector, must have known Jesus personally. Or maybe he was friends with some of the people who were already following Jesus, right? Well, unfortunately, Mark is entirely silent on that point. And like it is, Mark has no regard whatsoever for what might have been going on in Levi's mind when he made this all-important decision. Why is that? Why wouldn't he tell us? Why wouldn't he say, and Levi, having come to know and love Jesus, knew that this would be the way to eternal life, and so he left his job and followed him? Or why wouldn't he say, Levi, having seen the many miracles that Jesus had performed in the city, knew that this was indeed the Son of God, and so he, you know, something along those lines. That's what I'm looking for. But the text doesn't tell us any of that. So why did he do it? Well, the simple reason, at least in the Gospel of Mark, seems to be the reason Levi responded to Jesus' invitation was because it was Jesus who extended it. It was Jesus who called. And because it was Jesus, Levi follows at once. This is an encounter with a tax collector, and this authority that Jesus uses, it's like absolute, it's direct, it is unaccountable authority. Because Jesus is who he is, he has the authority to call obedience, and people do it. That seems to be the point in Mark. Most of us have met probably somebody with something like this in their personality or in their persona. People who just like have an authority. It doesn't matter how much money they have, what their station in life is, their age, their net worth. When these people speak, people just listen. Maybe you know someone like that. You've been around someone like that. Often they gravitate to positions of power because they're so effective at communicating and getting people to do what they need them to do. Jesus has this authority, this power. He has the right to call people. I mean, it is his God-given right to call people. And he doesn't promise rewards if they accept. He doesn't paint a glowing picture of discipleship. It'll be the most fun. We're going to have the best time, right? He doesn't plead. He doesn't sell. He doesn't cajole people. He just calls for a decision. And the call to follow requires a decision. That's the thing about it. Like you have to make, in all the examples we've talked about, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, Levi here, and all those examples we've talked about, the people that Jesus called, they had to make a decision, right? You can't just sit on the fence on this one. This is either a yes or a no thing. You have to make that decision, and it has visible consequences. Peter, Andrew, James, and John, they're like out fixing their nets, right? And Jesus comes up and he calls them. What do? They're like, "Oh, that sounds like a great idea. What about next Tuesday? I'll put you down for 9. No, it's like an immediate decision. They set down their nets right there. They get up, they follow him. Levi's like, "Oh, that sounds like a great idea to follow Jesus. If I could finish the work week, I promised my boss I'd put in another 30 hours. Then I'll put in, you know." No, Matthew just gets up from his tax collector's booth and takes off. That's what happens in the gospel. There's this immediate decision. And even those who refuse the invitation, they still got to make a decision too. They had to make a decision that was public. They had to make a decision that was visible. Remember the rich young ruler? Mark chapter 10. Jesus started on his way. This man comes up to him. He falls on his knee before him. And he says, "Good teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" He's asking for what he should do, right? What should I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus says, "Why do you call me good?" Deflecting like Jesus does. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not give false testimony. Do not defraud. Honor your father and mother." "Teacher," he declared, "all these I have kept since I was a boy." Jesus looked at him and loved him. "One thing you lack," he said. "Go sell everything you have and give to the poor. And you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." And at this, the man's face fell. He went away sad because he had great wealth. See, the invitation of Jesus, it has a way, it's kind of like a sword or a sharp knife. It divides people into two very distinct categories. There are those who accept it and are willing to leave and follow, and there are those who reject it and those who are unwilling to pay the price to follow Jesus. It divides everybody in this whole world. It's tough to divide people into two groups all of the time. There's often a lot of gray area between on virtually everything. But in this area, Jesus' word, his authority, his invitation cuts right in two between those who accept and those who reject. And those who accepted this invitation from then on, they were called disciples. And that has to be true of us today. If we accept the invitation of Jesus, it's an invitation to become disciples. That's what it means to follow Jesus. But what does that involve? What does that mean to be a disciple? Well, remember that passage earlier from Mark chapter 8? This kind of overall passage we talked about. "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." What Jesus wants, when he's issuing an invitation, "I want you to know exactly what you are being invited to, what you're being invited to do." He didn't want people in his own day getting the wrong idea, and didn't want you and I getting the wrong idea about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, what it would mean to answer his call. The call to discipleship, it's about self-denial, which means giving up what you want and pursuing the desires of the King, the Master, right? Take up a cross, that means to literally go to your death. Like if anybody in Jesus' day, and it's great for us because we think about it as a metaphor, but in Jesus' day it was a literal thing. If anybody is taking up their cross, not somebody else's cross, if you are taking up your cross, there is only one place you are going, and that is to die. So when Jesus calls his disciples and says, "Deny yourself, like give up what you want, take up your cross, you're going to die, and follow me." Like you're following Jesus in his footsteps. Now, in Jesus' day, to be a disciple, it was a literal following in Jesus' day. And we sing about it today, and we sing about songs like Jesus is Tenderly Calling, or Softly and Tenderly, Jesus is Calling. But I don't know if we often communicate what he's calling us to. Because Jesus is not calling you, he's not calling me to church membership. He's not calling us to have good deeds or high morals. Jesus is not even calling for us to have our sins washed away, though every one of those things is involved. They're all a part of it, and they're all good things, right? Jesus is calling us to follow him. That's what he's calling us to do. We're called to follow Jesus, to be his disciples. The sad tragedy is that so many people hear the call of Jesus, they want to accept the call of Jesus, but they have no idea this self-denial, cross-taking up following that's a part of the invitation. For so many, the acceptance of the invitation of Jesus means maybe quit drinking quite so much, maybe quit cussing all the time, maybe be faithful to my spouse, be honest in my business. That's what it means to follow Jesus. And that's not it at all. Sure, yeah, it would be good to do all those things. Don't get me wrong. But this is about following Jesus in every facet of our life. And notice that Jesus doesn't try to persuade. He doesn't like say, here's the benefits. It's not like it's a job application. And if we hire you, this will be the pay. Here's the retirement package. Here's the health insurance. Here's the dental benefits. Here's the days off you get a year. You know, this is all the good. This is why you want to accept this job, right? Because we got this whole package. And the discipleship package for Jesus is death, suffering, separation from your family and friends, which is not a very enticing package. But that's what Jesus puts out there. Jesus calls, Jesus the Lord and Master, He, the Son of God, the Creator of the universe, He is the one who calls. He and He alone has the power and the authority to call people. And the power of His invitation, the power in His invitation, lies in the one who extended it. It's not because it's got all these great benefits, it's because it's Jesus. That's why we respond. Most of us here, probably this morning, would describe ourselves as Christians, right? I see three of you out there. Congratulations. Right? Most of us would describe ourselves as Christians this morning. We heard the invitation of Jesus at some point in our lives. Maybe we were a teenager. Maybe we were a little bit older. But we heard the call of Jesus at some point in our lives. And we accepted that invitation. Maybe reluctantly at first. Maybe eagerly. Maybe we couldn't get to it fast enough. But we accepted eventually this invitation of Jesus. But do we understand what that invitation involves? That it involves being self-deniers and cross-bearers and followers. Because if we're not doing those things, we can't really be followers of Jesus, right? If we're not really disciples, we're not really following Jesus. I think somewhere in translation we thought we were being called to a religion. Have you ever heard Christianity described as a religion? It's considered one of the great world religions. There's Christianity and Islam and Judaism and Hinduism and Buddhism. There's a great many world religions. And so Christianity is just sort of lumped in there. But the thing is, Jesus didn't come to establish a religion. He certainly didn't come and die on the cross so that you would become a part of some religion. To call following Jesus a religion is to vastly undersell what it is. It is not a one day a week or a certain set of beliefs commitment. It is a life and a lifestyle commitment. It is every facet of your life. It is following Jesus every morning, every afternoon, and every evening. It is rising up in the morning and doing what God bids you instead of what you want. It is going to bed at night knowing that you have lived in such a way that you have revealed His glory and not tried to achieve a glory of your own. It is to live in such a way that you deny yourself, that you take up that cross that Jesus took up to follow Him. Jesus does not call us to a religion. He calls us to follow. That's what it means to be a disciple. And this morning, if you are not a Christian, the great news is, I mean, great news beyond great news, is that the Lord and the Master and the Creator of the universe, the one through whom everything was made that has been made, the one who came to this earth and took on the form of a human being and gave up His life and died on the cross, poured out His blood sacrificially both in living and His death so that you might have new life. Gave up His life so that you might have new life. That's the kind of example. That's who we follow. Giving up your life so that others might have life. That Jesus extends His invitation to you this morning. And to be perfectly clear, it is not an easy life. There's a lot of times in my life that I've been thankful that I've followed Jesus because it spelled out things clearly. It made life easier, and that is all true. But I'm going to tell you, just to be bluntly honest, sometimes following Jesus is really hard. Anybody who worked with clothes this last week at One Day will confess that. Sometimes following Jesus makes life more complicated, not easier. Sometimes it requires more of you than you think you have to give. But He's offering it to you. Not because you're so deserving or so worthy, but because He loves you so much. And this invitation this morning is extended to you. And we have an opportunity at this right now for you to do that, for you to lay down your life and to take up the life of Christ, to lay down your burdens and take up the cross of Christ and to follow Him. And if we can help you with that at all this morning, if you need prayers, if you need strength or encouragement or forgiveness, we want you to know we're here for you. And if we can do any of that for you, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?